current administration has banned the use of a chemical I've talked about for a long time, over a decade. Chlorpyrifos is the name of it. It's a widely used pesticide, long targeted by, I guess I'm an environmentalist, but other people that are just worried because on food crops, it shows risk, especially to children and the farm workers around it, but even to the people that are eating the crops that they're putting it on. The Environmental Protection Agency acted after a federal appeals court ordered the government in April of this past year to determine quickly whether the pesticide is safe or should be prohibited. During the Obama administration, the EPA had actually initiated the ban, but the agency was forced to reverse that decision after President Trump came into office. One of the first things he did was wipe out a bunch of the environmental programs we had trying to protect our environment. The current president has pledged a review of more than 100 of his predecessor's environmental regulatory actions that he canceled. Today, EPA is taking an overdue step to protect the public health. That's according to Administrator Michael Regan. After the delays and denials of the prior administration, EPA will follow the real science and put health and safety first. It's about time. Chlorpyrifos is applied on a bunch of numerous different crops, including soybeans, fruit and nut trees, broccoli and cauliflower, two things we always think are so safe for us. Studies have linked it to potential brain damage in children and fetuses that could lead to reduced IQ, memory loss, and attention deficit disorders. The Pesticide Action Network North America and the National Resources Defense Council petitioned separately to the EPA back in 2007 to revoke all approved levels of chlorpyrifos in food. Back then, the EPA said it would do so. Now we're re-looking at that whole picture based on its findings that chlorpyrifos did not meet a legally required standard of reasonable certainty that exposure to the pesticide wouldn't be harmful to humans and the environment. It is gratifying to see the EPA once again adhere to the best available science when making critical regulatory decisions. It's got to be based on science, folks. The European Union, Canada, and some states, including California, Hawaii, New York, Maryland, and Oregon, have restricted application of chlorpyrifos on foods for a while now. Those limits and development of replacement pesticides have led to a steady decline in farmers' use of chlorpyrifos even before this ban will go into effect. The ban will safeguard farm workers, their families, communities, and the food supply in general. So now they have somebody with a brain in charge of the EPA. It's finally going to follow its own findings on this poisonous pesticide. Teresa Romero, who's president of the United Farm Workers, said the group was really relieved that farm workers and their families will no longer have to worry about the myriad of ways this pesticide impacts their lives. The company Conteva had been the world's largest manufacturer of the pesticide, but stopped producing it about a year ago. The company, created after a merger of Dow Chemical and DuPont, said previously that declining sales drove its decision and that it considered chlorpyrifos safe in spite of what science shows. EPA said after taking public comments, it would continue reviewing whether to allow the use of chlorpyrifos for purposes not directly tied to food production, such as cattle ear tags and mosquito control. Not even sure how they do that. Still going into the environment. Bills seeking to prohibit use of chlorpyrifos and similar pesticides have been proposed in Congress. Incidentally, this chemical's been around, folks. It was introduced by Dow Chemical back in 1965 and was banned for household use as early as 2001. They've known for a long time this was a dangerous environmental pesticide. But like all big companies, Dow and them, they're all tied together, DuPont, Corteva, just follow the money if you want to know why they're doing it. It's got nothing to do with the responsibility of our environment or, of course, the safety of our own food that we eat on a daily basis. Lawsuits were previously filed just some time back seeking damages against Dow Chemical and Contiva, as well as companies that apply the chemical. They allege contamination of personal belongings inside farming community homes. Suits were filed last year on behalf of farm laborers in the nation's largest agricultural state. Stuart Caldwell is an attorney representing the plaintiffs, and he said he was pleased that EPA's decision was as good as it was, but that health risks remain in areas blanketed with chlorpyrifos for decades. Today's action won't clean up the mess, and the danger won't go away until someone does clean it up. We need to hold the chemical companies responsible for the damage they do to the people around them and, of course, the environment that they affect. They go in, they frack, they dirty up the water. In the case of the West Virginia coal mines, they've ruined many, many miles of what was good, clean water, is ruined for years, and they have no responsibility to clean it up. Now, as we turn away from coal, part of that is to go back and make them responsible for the damage they did to the earth. They have gotten pretty good about having to at least somewhat rebuild the landscape as they ruin it. But until they're forced to clean up their mess, they're not going to do it, folks. We've let them get away with it for too many years, and that's not just here in the United States. There's a similar situations all over the earth. So we have to take a stand, not just here, but worldwide. If you pollute in the process of get the energy or whatever you're doing, part of the expense of getting that energy would be you clean up after you're through. I don't find that rocket science, folks. But while we're sort of talking science, let's talk about a new science. There are new iron-based batteries now that offer an alternative to lithium, and in certain situations are really, really as efficient or maybe even more so. And in addition, are much cheaper to build and to operate. Now that we're moving to environmentally safe and green alternative energies, batteries are needed to store clean power from wind and solar. But the high cost of lithium batteries have slowed their widespread adoption. Companies have long sought to produce alternatives made of cheaper materials like zinc. And there's an Oregon-based company called ESS Inc. And they say now they've developed a much more affordable and better performing battery. The good news is it's made with iron. CSB Energy Corp., a clean energy firm, is planning to install these batteries at solar projects across the United States, where they will store surplus power generated during the day and distribute it at night. The company will deploy enough batteries to power 50,000 homes as a test, I guess it's going to be, but that's a lot. Unlike lithium-ion batteries, iron flow batteries are really cheap to manufacture. The batteries themselves are made of iron, salt, and water. While it's true that lithium-ion batteries have gotten dramatically cheaper over the last decade, with prices dropping around 90%, their dependence on expensive materials like nickel and cobalt means that there is a limit to how far costs can go down. Whereas, lithium-ion batteries used for power storage can cost up to about $350 per kilowatt hour, ESS's new iron-based batteries could be purchased for as little as $200 per kilowatt hour, almost cut in half, folks, and probably far less than that once they get in big production by 2025. And incidentally, they store energy for longer and with a higher efficiency than the lithium ions do. A little bit on the downside, but not bad. Since iron flow batteries do not work like the lithium ion batteries used, for instance, in your smartphone or your electric vehicles, they have limited applications. Because the electrolytes stored within them need to be moved with a physical pump, iron flow batteries are much larger than lithium ion batteries. ESS batteries are sold inside shipping containers. I've seen them along the roads now, but they are still a really practical option for grid storage of mass amounts of energy. Long-duration energy storage like this that is served by the iron flow battery is key to adding more renewables to the grid. And as they develop and come along, they will make electricity or power, energy, whatever you call it, less and less expensive over time. Unlike petroleum products, an ideal example of that is our car gasoline that's now up to averaging $3.50 a gallon, and in some states, $5 a gallon. And we have no control over that. The electric system will be less expensive, much cleaner, and much more dependable. And finally, a whole different approach to electric cars that at least I hadn't thought about, but it makes real sense. How about electric charging highways? State of Michigan, historically the focus of the American auto industry, has announced a new initiative to develop the nation's first wireless charging infrastructure on a roadway. The inductive vehicle charging pilot is a partnership between the Michigan Department of Transport and the Office of Future Mobility and Electrification. A lot of them. Big words, folks, but it makes sense. What they're going to do is deploy an electrified roadway system that allows buses, shuttles, and other vehicles to charge while they're driving down the road, allowing them to operate continuously without stopping to charge. In principle, the electrified roadways have the potential to accelerate the adoption of electric vehicles and turn public streets into safe and sustainable shared energy platforms. This is especially valuable for drivers who might not have access to conventional charging facilities. What an interesting idea. The basic concept is just to embed coils in a road that will convey electricity to the cars outfitted with the coils of their own. It's much like the wireless charging pads used to power your smartphones. I've got one. They work great. And the state of Indiana is also pursuing this concept on their own. Now, of course, up front, you know, clearly that driving through a mile stretch of roadway for a minute or two is probably not going to give you a whole heck of a lot of energy by itself. Scaling up the technology, though, represents a significant challenge right now just because of the building situation. How practical such a scheme is right now from technology and economic perspective is kind of up in the air. In any case, it is interesting to see that states are looking at various alternatives for providing access to charging infrastructures to the growing population of electrified vehicles. And once again, thanks for staying tuned and finding me here on Organic Matters.